Hello and welcome to Cruisin' for a Reviewsin', the podcast where I get a friend to watch a Tom Cruise movie they've never seen before and then review it with me. I'm your host, Cara Westworth, and today I'm joined by my sister-in-law, Britt.
Hello, thank you for having me.
You're welcome, Britt. Thank you so much for doing this with me, offering to be the person to help me review Mission Impossible Fallout.
It's been so exciting. It's actually been such a long time coming too because of this podcast. I've been watching all of the Mission Impossibles weekly and then listening to the podcast after and getting like the hot takes and stuff. So it's been very, very enjoyable.
That is amazing, and I thank you profusely for doing that. That makes me feel like this has all been worth it. All right, so Mission Impossible Fallout. This is the movie that made me fall in love with Tom Cruise. That's pretty much the easiest way to sum up why I love this movie. I guess because it's such an absolute fucking banger that I had no choice kind of thing. Like, yeah, I watched it and I was like, oh, that was so good. I can't hate Tom Cruise after seeing something that good. And then I kept reading up on Tom Cruise and everything and then talking to people about stunts and stuff. And I'm like, uh-oh. It's done. I'm a Tom Cruise fan.
It is a ridiculous film.
It is. Well, before we get into everything, just on face value, what did you think?
I thought it was fantastic. In the lead up to it, I was really scared to get spoilers and stuff like that, which is amazing because I've not watched any of the Mission Impossibles before this year. And it's incredible that none of the movies have actually been spoiled for me. Like, I've seen like Charlie's Angels and like that one scene in the Spice Girls movie, which I referenced back to them. But other than that, like every shock, every twist, every turn has been a full surprise for me.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Especially because like I'm such a pop culture junkie anyway. And I was going to like prepare a little bit for this podcast and like do some research and stuff. But then seeing your activity on Instagram over the last couple of days, I was like, well, shit, I'm just going to be teaching or telling Cara how to like suck eggs, like little Tom Cruise eggs. I decided to do no research and just be positively delighted by all the facts you're going to tell me today.
Wonderful. I kind of like it like that because, you know, you can be like the audience being like, whoa, I didn't know that. Whoa. Amazing. I have probably talked about it a lot in my Instagram stories, so they're not all going to be surprises, but we'll see how we go. All right. So Mission Impossible Fallout is the sixth movie in the franchise. It is the second movie directed by Christopher McQuarrie, who has now written for Tom Cruise movies 9 times, I think. So it's kind of like that pairing that, you know, I'm trying to think of examples. Tim Burton and Danny Elfman kind of, they just work really well together, I guess. So yeah, it is continuing the story of Ethan Hunt saving the world. And somehow, despite this being the sixth movie in the franchise, it is the best. It has no right to be this good. And it's infuriating because, you know, some movies can't even get to number two and be good. So I don't know how they keep doing it. Let's have a chat about what happens in the movie. This is going to be a long one. I'm sure you've figured that out already. I have researched this so extensively. Like, I watched the movie twice in 2 days. I was going to watch the director's commentary, but I didn't. I just watched it because I just wanted to enjoy it again. I've watched all of the behind the scenes a million times. I've listened to Christopher McQuarrie did a podcast with Empire Magazine, and it ended up being 6 hours long about this one movie.
How many times have you seen the film, like, flat out, do you think?
It'd be like 50. For a while there, it was like at least once a week.
Holy moly. Poor Ben.
Well, he's always asleep on the couch. It's fine. But
I wonder if you've ever had like Tom Cruise dreams as well. You're just like dialogue in your sleep, like running.
Probably. But also because I watch it so much, I don't, like, I'm usually playing Animal Crossing or doing other stuff. So watching it again twice, trying to concentrate properly, so much I forgot about and missed because I just haven't watched it properly for a while. So that was nice.
I would actually love to watch it a second time now as well, because like knowing all the twists and turns, you like then go back and you're like, oh, I wonder if there were all the Easter eggs and like where the hints and clues were. So
yeah.
I would be keen to see this a second time as well, which is cool.
All right. Well, now that we've gotten through all that, let's talk about the movie and excuse all my interruptions, everyone. Okay, so we open in a different way to most of the other films because it opens on a dream sequence. Ethan Hunt is getting married to his former wife, Julia, who is out of the picture. So I think it sort of sets it up that it's a dream straight away. And the person who was marrying them starts saying some really weird stuff about, like, I don't know, I can't remember, but it was like stuff that made Ethan go, wait, what?
Yeah, it goes from like the wedding vows into almost like the promises he had to make as as an agent.
Mm, yes. So he looks at the person who is marrying them, and it's Solomon Lane, who was from the last movie, who's bearded and looking very different, but it's definitely Solomon Lane. And he ends it with, "You should have killed me, Ethan." And then he wakes up in Belfast in a cold room. Oh my God. I could probably speak 10 minutes just about this scene, because Christopher McQuarrie talks about how he made that room look cold, and which is all very interesting being a film nerd. But I also thought watching that, they're like, we had to make it look like this room was really cold. I'm like, do you know what would have made it look cold? If Ethan Hunt wore a jumper instead of a shirt.
Well, he's sitting there in a shirt and with his shoes on. It's like, who naps like that?
He has to be quick to run.
I wonder, like, how dream memories work too, because I would have thought that, like, wouldn't Solomon Lane be the Solomon Lane that Ethan Hunt has seen before as well?
That's a really good point. Why? Just... oh no, we're gonna pick the shit out of this shit. maybe he's encountered Solomon Lane since then. He knows. I don't know. That's
a weird deja vu effect,
He hears a knock at the door. There's like a courier or someone at the door, and he like holds the gun up. And the guy says, "Fate whispers to the warrior. A storm is coming," is the reply. The courier says, "Warrior whispers back." And Tom Cruise says, "I am the storm."
I am the storm.
Which I mentioned that because I'm getting that as a tattoo at some point, because I love that so much. And it's like very subtly like, Fallout.
Yeah, this movie's going to be great.
He's given his mission. It's in a Homer's Odyssey book. It's a tape recorder cut out in it, which is pretty neat. Little tape recorder cut out.
And
it's
a brutal about... little prick that made me flinch.
Yeah. Yeah. Couldn't they just zap, like, do his eye? I think they were going old school for that one.
It's his hemoglobin or something.
Yes,
sure, exactly. He was a healthy agent.
So the message is about the syndicate and how since Solomon Lane was captured, it's gotten worse because now they're basically made themselves terrorists for hire and have like a smallpox broke out and in Kashmir and all sorts of stuff are happening. There's been a manifesto by a guy called John Lark who is like basically threatening to do awful things in the world. You know what? Manifesto is full of shit. There's a missing nuclear scientist and they think that there's some plutonium that is going on sale in the black market. So they think the syndicate are going to try and get the plutonium. They've captured this scientist and they're going to make 3 big bombs. So the mission is, you got to stop that, mate. And we cut to Berlin and Ethan and Benji are together. They're going to meet the seller of the plutonium. Luther is in the van and it's like kind of cute and they're all like having some banter.
They're all really small too. He's got like a full suit on and everything.
Yeah, I know. Benji's going like full like Ethan Hunt kind of thing. Benji's really nervous because he's meeting like, you know, they're meeting a pretty bad dude and they're kind of teasing him for being nervous. And he's like, well, I bet you get nervous, Ethan. He's like, no, I don't. Like, are you sure? And like, I never get nervous. I'm Ethan Hunt. And
it's possible to be relaxed and uneasy at the same time. But this little like moment of banter I put down as my first Tom Cruise-ism, because he's like being all smart-assy and has a little smile laugh.
Yeah, just like a little subtle Tom Cruise-ism smile. Yeah. As they're talking about the money and the guys turn up, Luther's van goes dark. Obviously, there's some bad dude is going to interfere with this meeting.
Is this the first time actually a bag of money in the whole series as well? At seeing money.
I think so. Ethan Hunt asks for the money. Like, obviously Luther doesn't respond. So the arms dealer's like, shoot them. And then there's a big shootout. There's a third party there shooting these arms dealers. And yeah, all hell breaks loose. Luther's held hostage at one point. And Ethan being Ethan can't let Luther die because, you know, even though it's these 3 big plutonium balls that are, you know, in the wrong hands are going to cause devastation, that's just not Ethan Hunt's style. So he ends up, he shoots Luther in the chest, but he has a bulletproof vest on, so he's okay. But in the meantime, in all the fuss, they lose the plutonium. We immediately see the effects of what happened, or so we think, because we see Wolf Blitzer, the CNN news host, talking about 3 bombings in 3 holy sites around the world. And the scientist, Nils de Broek, is in hospital and he wakes up to hear this news and is all delighted because his plan with John Lark and everything came to fruition. Ethan does this bit where he's like, step out, Luther. I'm going to fuck him up. And like, no, it's not you. Like, as if Luther could hold back. But as it turns out, it's just a big ploy to trick this guy into giving all the details to find out Lark. Benji, for the first time in the whole series, is wearing a mask.
<It's actually laughs>
he finally gets to wear a mask.
Just so happy for him.
No, and he's like so stoked. Like, it's probably not the first time he's worn a mask. Like, we've probably not seen all the missions where he's worn a mask, but you can still see he's fucking stoked. He's like, did I do good? How was I? So they've basically managed to get the information they need to pursue John Locke. They've tricked the scientist. And now we have the opening title, 15 minutes into the movie, which is pretty wild. It's another one of those opening sequences where it shows what's happening in the movie. And because everything in this movie is fucking incredible, it is an incredible opening sequence.
So just much
fucking Tom Cruise either running or jumping off something. It's amazing. So we go to an airstrip where Ethan is meeting Huntley, which is Alec Baldwin's character from the last movie. He is now actually the head of the secretary of the IMF. He's moved across from the CIA. When he says something about, like, people said this was a lateral move or like a going down, but you convinced me to move over.
Yeah, he
I
says
believe in us.
About the IMF, which is kind of surprising as well. You're like, oh, he's fully on their side now.
Yeah, he's fully on their side. I guess after that amazing trickery with the Prime Minister.
Amazing.
In the last movie, he was like, oh, this is great. I want to do this all the time. So they're basically going, they need to get the plutonium, and they found this a woman who is basically an arms dealer who most people think is like a philanthropist, socialist kind of person, but she has the plutonium and she is currently going to be meeting John Locke to sell them. Ethan has to get there, capture John Locke, wear a mask of John Locke's face and intercept the plutonium, which sounds really easy, except all of a sudden the director of the CIA, Erica Sloan, who is played by Angela Bassett. She turns up and she is a tough lady.
She's boss bitch.
Yeah, she's like, shut him down. And behind her is a very handsome fellow known as August Walker, who is played by Henry Cavill. Yes, Henry Cavill's in this movie and it is a good time for my eyes. He rings up and they shut the plane down. Basically, the plane can't go unless the CIA sends their person, which is August Walker. Because of Ethan losing the plutonium, the CIA is like, nah, we don't trust you, so we need you to take our guy and do it our way, kind of thing. And she says a really good line, which I love. She's like, you like having a scalpel, I prefer the hammer. So Ethan's the scalpel, August Walker's the hammer. He's a notorious...
The hammer with a mustache.
Yeah, he's such a hammer. He's built like a fucking hammer. My God. So they go up in this huge, big plane. So the plane is pretending to be a commercial... So I think it's meant to be just a normal plane. Pretending to be a big aeroplane up really, really high. So they have to do a halo jump. And they explain it in the movie. But basically, a halo jump is high altitude, low opening. So you actually jump out way, way above, like where people down... Like no one's going to see you. And then so you get in undetected. You actually open the parachute really low. So obviously it's really dangerous.
That's horrifying.
It's a lot. And yes, they did this. So this wasn't just, you know, film trickery, just doing a normal parachute jump. They literally did halo jumps to film this. Yeah, I'm probably going to spend a lot of time on this bit. So what actually happens in the scene is that Ethan is telling Walker what's going to happen. And Walker's just being a real smart ass about it. They put their helmets on and Ethan's trying to explain it to him. Like, Walker can't even operate his stupid air thing properly. And
oxygen's not on, yeah.
Yeah. Ethan goes to have a look to see before they jump. And there's a big, huge lightning storm happening. So it goes back to be like, we have to rethink this. Like, this is too dangerous. And Walker's like, get out of my way, Hunt. Pulls his air thing out and just pushes him away like a little kid and just marches off and like, I'll see you in France.
Bums away.
And just jumps out. So Ethan has to go out after him.
It's such a dick move.
It's such a dick move. Like, you're meant to fly out together. So he just pulls his air out. You fucking... douchebag. And so these helmets don't exist in real life until this movie because they built them specifically to be lit up and so that you don't just have their faces covered by a big oxygen mask.
Just to prove that Tom Cruise is doing the stunt, right?
Yeah. Pretty much. But because they couldn't just be, you know, just for looks, they actually had to work. So they had to build them properly and then like the Air Force had to test them to make sure they actually worked. So I imagine this is probably a technology they'll use moving forward. It's pretty wild.
Oh, that's so cool.
Like, because they also had to make sure like the lights, obviously because there's oxygen going in there, they had to make sure the lights never emitted a spark, so they had to use special lights and everything. Super, super intense. Have you ever watched the behind the scenes of them, how they film this?
No.
It's on YouTube. I highly recommend it. So the way they did this was they had one of the cameramen had to learn how to skydive. So this is all shot digitally because obviously a big film camera would be too hectic, but they had to mount the camera on his head and he had to basically walk backwards as Ethan's walking off the plane and just be like 3 feet in front of him the whole time. So and he falls off backwards and then Ethan falls off. And Tom Cruise had to get within 3 feet of this camera to be within the focus because the guy can't see anything. He just has to guess how to pull focus to make sure that Tom Cruise is in frame and in focus the whole time. So it's hectic, like watching the footage, because there's like multiple people, because even though Tom Cruise is an experienced skydiver, they still had all these people there just in case, helping them out. And like you watch the video, there's like one person is walking backwards filming the camera guy who's walking backwards filming Ethan Hunt. And yeah, it's amazing. So they filmed it in 3 parts. They filmed the initial falling off. They filmed the part where there's the tumbling in the air. So basically Walker, being the fucking dickhead that he is, gets hit by lightning immediately, falls unconscious. So Ethan has to not only chase after him, he has to grab him and is trying to wake him up, has to give him his oxygen because his oxygen has been knocked off. They're like in the air, and then he has to, when they get to the range where they had to pull the chute, he has to pull Walker's chute and may hope that he has woken up. And then Ethan pulls his like at the last second, barely in time not to go splat on the pavement. Yeah, so they filmed that in 3 parts. Everyone should just watch it. It's really, really cool how they filmed that. It's one of those things as well. They kept going, this was the most dangerous stunt. And then I watched the next stunt, the behind the scenes, and like, oh, this was such a dangerous stunt. I'm like, it's okay, it was all dangerous. We get it. Every stunt they did was the most dangerous.
What a stressful time for the crew.
I know. And they also, the way these...
You're like, man, I really want to kill our main actor.
Yes. So like they have stunt coordinators and all these people, you know, organizing the stunts and everything. But they often, a lot of these stunts and everything are a little bit on the fly. Like, this one wouldn't have been, but other ones are, where they just have to figure out how to do the stunt in a fairly short amount of time. Yeah, it's wild because they're like, oh, we found a great location. They're going to give it to us for 2 hours. How do we do this? So yeah, very stressful. And just knowing that he could go splat. Like, I think the only part where it wasn't Tom Cruise is when he presses the chute for Walker and then he kind of flips himself over to do his own. That wasn't Tom Cruise because that was too dangerous even for Tom Cruise. So they land on the Grand Palais, which is a beautiful old building in Paris. So there's a big rave going on and they have to get in there and basically find Lark. They've worked out that to get into the White Widow's party that she's hosting, you have a special wristband, and on the phone they got access to the information on the wristband, so they're able to track him.
Yeah, like what is the cover charge to this party? Like those wristbands would be like $50 each. Yeah. This is a high party.
Well, know? I guess because it was like a fundraiser that the White Widow was hosting, you probably paid like $1,000 a ticket or something ridiculous. And then, yeah, I'm guessing like it looks like that kind of fancy party. But for some reason, it's in a venue within the Grand Palais that's also holding a rave. I'm like, okay, I guess. Like you have to walk through the rave to get into this like really swanky fundraiser party. So they land at the Grand Palais. The scene that they cut out because it was an amazing, amazing stunt, but it just was making the movie too long and wasn't really necessary to explain how they got from the roof down. They're big steel cords, and Ethan climbs along one, undoes one, does a big swing back, grabs Walker, who's not expecting it, and they swing back over the big rave. They use their propulsion to smash through a window. It's an amazing stunt. It's a shame it's not in the movie, but you can see behind the scenes of that one too.
Totally unnecessary.
It's so unnecessary, but it was such a cool stunt. Like, especially because like Ethan grabs Walker and Walker's like, whoa, and then like just is falling and it's making fun of.
I have to admit, I spent the morning reading a lot of Fallout fan fiction, and that I can assure you there would be a lot more fan fiction about that.
I haven't read much. I've mostly only read a little bit about Ethan and Benji, but one I read was the most flowery, ridiculous thing I've ever read. Like I spent 10 minutes just laughing at one line. It was so, oh my God.
I've got a line for you later.
I can't wait. Yeah, so they get into the venue. They're scanning for, what's his name? Don Lark. They work out that he has gone into a bathroom. They're walking through this big rave. Tom Cruise is looking, walking through in his little white shirt. My sister and I are for some reason obsessed with that bit, just of him like trying to get through the crowd. They find him, they go into a bathroom, he's in there.
The widest bathroom in the world. Like heaven, like the cleanest bathroom in a rave I have ever seen in my life.
It must
have
been early in the night because... That's right. It's not going to stay clean for long. So they've narrowed it down. They've figured out, okay, this must be Lark. And plan is Ethan has this needle thing that he's going to put into John Lark's neck. It's going to make John Lark seem really drunk. And then they're going to scan his face. Ethan will take his identity, meet the White Widow. Bob's your uncle. The problem is they have someone sort of get in the way when Ethan's about to strike. And that gives John Lark a chance to realize, oh shit, there's some people after me. So this starts one of the best fight sequences I think I've ever seen in my entire life.
Incredible.
It's so good. Like it's so So if you've seen the movie True Lies, which is another one of my favorite movies, there is a really cool bathroom scene, but it is nothing like this one. This dude who is a famous stunt actor, he was meant to be the stunt double for whoever was going to be John Lark, and then just like, let's just make him John Lark.
Oh, sick.
He... it's just, yeah, absolutely brutal from... So the first thing they do, they start punching, and then Walker just picks up this chunky laptop thing that they use to make the face masks and just went whack right in his face, like he's the hammer and all mates the scalpel. Like, he nearly smashes the screen and everything, nearly ruins the whole plan. But they knock him out. They take him into a little stall and trying to scan his face in this mostly smashed laptop. As they're in there, four dudes come out from the rave. The lads. They're such fucking lads. I hate them. They notice that there are multiple sets of feet standing in the bathroom, and they're like, let's go be sleazy at them, and
we don't bite.
Let's all have sex. So gross. When they're like trying to scan and everything, John Lark actually regains consciousness, and as soon as those guys walk out, there's like a very brief but an explosive fight sequence just within that one cubicle, and they all sort of smash out. Super hectic, because Lark gets thrown through one of the big mirrors really dramatically by Walker. And lots of just one-on-one fist fighting, and they swap, and this guy is like a super duper martial artist as well, so he's kicking both their asses significantly. And like, there's so much I can say about this scene, but the main thing about it that everyone I hope knows about by now, even if they've never seen the movie, is there's a part where Walker is thrown to the ground and he takes off his jacket and then he just reloads his arms, like he cocks his arms, like it's a
fist cock, I like to call it.
It's the most amazing thing I've ever seen. Like, that trumps pretty much everything that Tom Cruise does in this movie. The director, Christopher Corey, is like, every time everyone really reacts really strongly to that, he's like, meanwhile, there's like these stunts that nearly killed Tom Cruise, but everyone's like, oh, did you see how he cocked his arms? Like,
Henry Cavill,
this thing that he just did on the fly. Anyway, I think it makes the whole movie. Like, there's also a fun bit where I saw it in a YouTube video where they were looking at how the stunts were done. And there's a part where Ethan's thrown to the ground and he kneels down on like a step near the urinals, and you can actually see it sink in a little bit. So a lot of it was for this really firm foam, so that when they were thrown around, it didn't really hurt. It's really cool. John Lark is very, very close to shooting Ethan Hunt right in the face. And meanwhile, like, August Walker's like sprawled on the ground. Just as you think Ethan's gonna get shot in the face, he gets thrown back, and Ilsa Faust, also from the last movie, has turned up and saved Ethan's life by shooting John Lark in the head, which is great because Ethan Hunt's not dead, but also sucks because their plan is ruined because you need a face in order to make a mask. So they very quickly work out, Ethan's just like, I'm going to pretend to be John Lark. Let's hope they haven't met. Walker's like, that's not a strategy. And Ilsa's like, well, you're new.
It's not a strategy? Yeah, it's like, lol, that's IMF's like only strategy.
And I also love, like, they set this up for the rest of the movie, but Walker just keeps trying to introduce himself to everyone, and they're like, they just refuse to introduce themselves back. And he's like, and he's like, when he comes out and she's standing there with a gun, and he comes like peeking around the corner, and like his little hands go up.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there's this fucking giant man who just, this big fist fight is like peeking around. It's very cute.
There's another thing that I loved as well was when, like, you know, Walker's knocked out, Tom Cruise has also like almost been knocked out as well. And he's got this look on his face. It's like, I'm defeated. Then he looks up and he's like, all right, and like gets up
and like just runs into, and they smash through a wall. This is one of the first ones, I think, where let Ethan Hunt look tired. Like, he actually just is like, Jesus Christ. It's also the first one where Tom Cruise looks like he's actually aged. Like, even in the last one, he still looked Tom Cruise. Like, I don't think it's a bad thing. This is a movie that made me fall in love with Tom Cruise, so I think that was part of it. Yep, so big fight on my notes to signify the cocking of the arms. I just wrote bam bam, because that's all I think about when that happens. Oh, when they also go, and this is a very important point that you may have missed because I missed it the first time I watched it. When Ethan goes and searches John Lark's body, he grabs his wristband so he can get into the party, and he also pulls out his phone, which is all smashed. So important thing for later. Yeah, so Ethan is basically going to this party. He goes in, Ilsa follows him, and she's trying to talk him out of going in, but she cannot say or refuses to say why. He's like, you don't know what you're getting into. And he's like, I don't know what I'm getting into. What am I getting into? The first bewildered Tom Cruise in this movie. Yeah, but he goes in, he meets the White Widow. Fun thing about this scene. So they go in and she's doing this speech, and I don't know if you caught it, but she mentions that her mum's name is Max, who was the arms dealer in the first movie.
She was talking about paradoxes, and I at the airport earlier, Alec Baldwin talks about like the fact that, you know, he only saves his friends against saving the world. And so I was like, oh, you know, there's like kind of the trolley trolley paradox, trolley problem thing going on here. And then she took paradoxes and I was like, well, maybe that's tied
together. Well, I think because in a few weeks since I've watched the first one, but I think Max in the first one does talk about how he's a paradox.
Yeah, she does. And then they have this like dirty, flirty conversation.
That's surprisingly flirty movie that made no sense. So Ilsa won't say why, like as far as I think Ethan kind of thinks that maybe she has to kill Lark. And so she's like, ah, shit, now. Turns out that's not the point, but we'll get there soon. They go in, he meets White Widow and she's all flirty to Tom Cruise as well, just like mother, like daughter. And Ethan is pretending, like playing up that he's like this big bad dude and he's like really rough with her and really mean. And her brother tries to intervene and anyway.
Bargain basement, Tom Hardy tries to intervene.
Like the Tom Hardy bind wish. Ethan warns her because he knows from Ilsa that there are assassins there to kill John Lark. So he sort of twists it around and says, there are people here to kill you. You need to come with me so you'll be safe. So he gets her out of there and there's like a bit of a fight where, and she even has a few stabs, gets a really cool knife out of her garter belt, stabs a few.
Butterfly knife, like right on garter. And I was really, like, I was so happy to see Ilsa back in general, but Ilsa had flats on in this fight. So the last movie, every 5 seconds, she was like, take my shoes off. But like this one, nah,
she learned. Also, probably because the actress Rebecca Ferguson was heavily pregnant when she filmed this movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, she might not have been that pregnant there, but she was. But in the final scene, she was 7 months pregnant, which is pretty wild. She even does her cool thing where she does her Ilsa takedown. Like she comes flying off and uses her leg to like knock. It's so good. But she kind of just disappears with the crowd because she's not meant to be there. Walker and Ethan leave with the White Widow. They go back to this very, very fancy mansion where they think they're going to go buy the plutonium. But as it turns out, White Widow's just a broker and that the deal is the seller wants someone broken out of prison to give the plutonium. And Ethan looks down and there's a photo and he pulls it out and it's Solomon Lane. Solomon Lane with his beard as per the start of the scene.
You'd be so dirty. Yeah. You'd be so upset about it.
Because even like, what's his face? Walker is looking like, why is Ethan so into it? Why does Ethan, because Ethan says to the White Widow, she's like, who is this man? We know he's a bad guy, but who is he? And Ethan Hunt sort of goes through all the shit that he did to be caught in the first place.
His resume.
And yeah, the job is they have to break him out of this armored vehicle because he's being transported the next day. And then there'll be a meeting point where they can sort the plutonium for Solomon Lane. And then there's a nice little flash forward scene where they go through the plan and like Ethan's faced with having to shoot a cop, like kill him because everyone's standing right because he has to play this role. But
I was like, what has he become? Because it was like war style, stylistic, like slow and music. And like it did feel a bit off. And then that happened and I was like, oh my God, this movie has taken a deep turn.
Well, apparently the director wanted to take Ethan to a very dark place, but they didn't have time. So that was kind of it's a 2.5 hour movie. So, you know, only so much you can fit in there.
They're just into dream sequences. They love it.
More dream sequences in this one movie than in the entire series, which was different. But also Christopher McQuarrie said, because they've always been different directors for each film. So for this film, he wanted this to feel like a very different movie to the last one. So it felt like a different director. So that might be why he did that. Flash forward, Ethan killing the cop and like it cuts back and he's like, we have to kill everyone. He's like, you draw the line at killing cops. And she's like, that's John Lark you're talking to. He's like, I kill women and children with smallpox. I have no line. Like real good acting, Ethan.
Ooh, you need a cold shower after that, surely.
So that for good faith, they give him one ball of plutonium to show that they actually had the plutonium. So they have to meet up the next day and go through this crazy plan. In the meantime, Walker meets up with Sloan at the Court of Human Rights at the Eiffel Tower. And if Ben will ever edit this fucking photo for me, I tried to recreate a photo from the movie where it's Sloan and Walker talking, but it's just me in the photo talking to myself. Anyway, we took the photo and Ben hasn't edited yet, but he promised he will for this podcast.
Guys, comments. Get in the comments.
We need to see this dumb picture. He tells her about the plan and she's like, this is bullshit. We wanted John Lark to break Lane out. We don't want Ethan Hunt doing it. That's where Walker insinuates very heavily that he believes that Ethan Hunt is John Lark and's like, maybe he set it up that it was a decoy John Lark and that so he arranged for his lady friend to kill him. So now he gets to assume his own role, pretending he's working for the good guys. She's like, well, where's your evidence? And he says, it's all on this phone we pulled off the body in the bathroom, and hands her this phone and there's no cracks on it.
It's shiny and new. And this is where I was like, things are not as they seem. Because I was like, surely a movie this big budget wouldn't have a continuity error like that. And then I was like, I don't trust this.
I was like, That was how they were saying Walker is the bad guy. I missed it the first time I watched it, so it took me ages to work out. It wasn't until the big reveal later that you find out Walker's a bad guy, but this is the point where you go, oh, okay, Walker's giving a dodgy phone, he's setting Ethan up, he's obviously the bad guy. And also,
no, it wasn't that obvious to me either. Oh, I was kind of okay. Because the big reveal was
We cut to the next day. They're all in position for the big Solomon Lane heist. The plan is, so they need to basically divert the cavalry of cars and vehicles that are escorting him to the new location. They need to divert it near the River Seine. Is it River Seine? I don't know. And so the way they do it is they just have this big truck come out and just flip over. And so they have to divert. I don't actually know what the plan is. I think they just get out, stop them, and just shoot everyone and take Lane.
This scene is like very Batman-y as well. Like with all the city drama and the cops doing all their things, it had a real like Batman vibe to it.
I found a lot of people with the truck going into the water thought it was like one of the Batman movies that happens, and Christopher McQuarrie is like, absolutely not. Like, it was just, we needed to put a truck in the water. It did not mean to look Batman-y. So you're not the only person who's seen that.
How funny, yeah.
So Ethan, because Walker keeps, like, he's like a fucking giant child. He's like, is it true that Solomon Lane did this? And Ethan's like, yep. He's like, well, is it true that Solomon Lane did this? And he's like, yeah, okay, it's all true.
Made me laugh so much. Because I was like, this just reminded me so much of Dumb and Dumber, where he's like, do you want to know the most annoying noise in the world? And then like a bit later on, there's like the comically people like rolling around in the back of the van, which I'm seeing in Dumb and Dumber as well. Like they all come out. So this whole bit, I was just thinking about Dumb and Dumber and I couldn't get it out of my head.
Now that's all I'm going to be able to see now. So Ethan doesn't do what the plan is. He's set up a little camera so we can see when the truck is just in the big armored truck that Lane is all strapped up in. As soon as it's in front of where his truck is, he just floors it, smashes into the armored truck and pushes it into the river. And that's when all the guys in the background are flying everywhere. And then once that's out, he just zooms back, reverses. When they get out onto the main road, they go flying out in the road. The cops start chasing. They get chased in the little truck. They get away by taking this little truck into a tiny lane and just wedging it in. Which, like, how many fucking beautiful old buildings did you ruin for this? But it worked because all the cops behind him had to then climb over a truck to get them. They jump on motorbikes, Walker's off. Ethan Hunt's bike doesn't take off at first, so he's nearly caught. Zooms off, but now that's left Ethan on his own. And that means he has to be chased by the police by himself because they should have been able to get away and just sort of melt into the crowd and get away. But now he's being chased by cops really badly. So he like buzzes Benji and Luther, who they, in the meantime, Benji is in a wetsuit. He goes in and gets Lane. Oh, we forgot about the scene. One of the other iconic moments of this is when Lane is in the back of the thing and it starts filling with water and he's panicking. So he's got like a straitjacket on. So he just goes, starts blowing out all his air and then just holds his breath. But they've got that weird like rotating camera thing where you can see the water.
Yeah, like the van is spinning as it's falling into the ocean.
It's a really cool scene because the camera's staying still.
But it's so beautiful.
Benji actually cuts him out and rescues Lane before he drowns and they're in a big speedboat. Ethan says, I need a bailout, measure the blue point or whatever. So they turn around and zip off to meet Ethan. So thus we have the most amazing motorcycle chase ever. It's through the streets of Paris. So if you've ever been to Paris, they go past all of the iconic things. It is all Tom Cruise. It wasn't meant to be because it's all cobbled streets. It's really, really dangerous with most motorbikes because it's very slippery. And they were going to have a special rig to actually do a lot of the driving around. The rig fucked up on the first day of filming. So Tom Cruise is just like, I'll just do it. So
I think I held my breath in entire scene.
So, because like there's one bit and it's so well choreographed, and they also had French stunt drivers, so apparently there was a lot of language problems and like he nearly got hit a couple of times. And because there's a bit where he's zooming to the left of a car, but that car is actually turning left, so he has to like really zoom around to not get hit. Basically they end up at the Arc de Triomphe, and there's an amazing scene where
on the wrong way
he goes on and he's going the opposite way to traffic and the cops are following him and he's just weaving through, no helmet because he never wears a helmet, and just weaves through and doesn't die somehow.
Yeah, the Arc de Triomphe, which is like a 9-lane roundabout.
It's so fucked. The first time I went to Paris with my mum and sister, we were standing there looking at it and mum's like, I wonder how many people die on this roundabout every day. And yeah. Then that night, and then that night my mum got hit crossing a road in Paris and nearly died. So
oh my God.
Like, Mom, stop tempting fate. But yeah, so it's very dangerous looking, and Ethan gets out unscathed. There's a really cool bit where he gets to another kind of multi-lane intersection and stops and just like starts spinning around looking, and there's like just cops coming everywhere. So he like does a big spin and belts off one direction. And just as you think he's getting away, he turns around to see where everyone is, looks back. There's a car suddenly there. He T-bones the car, flies over it, does a big roll. All real too, by the way. If you slow it down, it looks CGI-ish. And Ben and I had an argument last night about it being CGI or not. But I'm like, the director explained how it was done. Like, it's the bike was just set up on a rig to stop really suddenly. And then Tom Cruise was on a cord that pulled him off. And then they spliced it really carefully with Tom Cruise rolling towards the camera.
Like, you think you have a hard day after going to the gym. Like, imagine how one day
in the behind the scenes, like, Tom Cruise is talking to some of the stunt guys and he has this big gash and bruise on his arm, and I'm like, oh my god, that man must be just like, oh Jesus,
fucking must love it.
Yeah, so he goes flying, but luckily he was right near the rendezvous point, so he just gets up, he pulls out a big knife out of his weird like knee pads that he was wearing.
It just comes out of the way,
and he just like, yeah, he hobbles off. And there, another Tom Cruise. I've actually been noting Tom Cruises as I go along.
Yeah. Running, yeah.
And he jumps over this bush and it's actually like a big mesh thing, and he's fallen through into the sewer.
Great.
And sewer. Yeah, it's all the cops are like, oh, where did he go? Sacre bleu. And it's because the boat was underneath, and they just cruise off. And like, Ethan just sitting there kind of looking a little bit disheveled. I'm like, that man just came off a motorbike and then fell into a sewer, and like, wild.
Which is like, there's a juxtaposing scene like while this is all happening, which is like the White Widow's henchmen. They like get out of this big truck, but the truck's sides fall down and they all come out, but they're all really stylish and they like are all, so it kind of looks like the start of like a Tap Dog movie.
Because they're all really buff too. They're really buff dudes. All getting into their really expensive cars.
I'm about to just be like...
That's amazing.
I was like, I'm going to pick up a trash can to start a beat.
I'm never going to see anything but that. Oh, wonderful. They meet at a garage. They've got Solomon Lane with his big hood on, and they put going into this tiny little green BMW, and...
All BMWs. I love that it's like an old BMW this time too.
Apparently it's a racing, like it's actually a proper racing car, like from, I guess, the 60s or something. It's very, very cute, very French looking. As they're loading Solomon in, they open up the garage door and there's this lady cop standing there, like writing a ticket, and she's like, obviously very green, because she's like, oh, stop, don't move. And they're like, and Ethan had, and a friend of mine messaged me about this. I just watched Fallout. Did you get a big lady boner with that French lady cop? I'm like, fuck you. Because he's so gentle and kind to her. And I'm like, yes, it was very nice. I liked it, yes. He's like trying to talk her out of like, you know, just walk away. It's fine. And she is kind of almost convinced. But then the White Widow's brother, whose name I think is Zola, his goons come and is like, just shoot her and go, Zola needs a word with you. Ethan's like, one guy goes to finish off the cop. And Ethan's like, what do I do? What do I do? And instead of letting the cop die, because he had that flash forward and was like, nah, I don't like that, he just shoots all the goons. Shoots like six men. So the one cop. And then like he goes up to the lady cop and is like, call for help. And then he just kind of cups her face really gently and says, I'm so sorry. And that's why I got that message from that friend, because it was very nice. It was very Ethan Hunt being very kind to someone who didn't deserve to be shot.
You're like, one can shoot me if he touches my face.
I know. Too, like, I'll take a shot in the leg. Like, you know, if I get shot like the guy in what's it called, Night and Day, that it just goes clean through, and then I get to my face touched by Tom Cruise, like that's fine. Actually, that's like a new Tom Cruise-ism, because in that movie he kindly shoot, like someone gets shot and he like really kindly like reassures them. Anyway, that's another thing Tom Cruise does, is reassure someone after they've been shot. Yeah, they then have a really epic
chasing.
Yeah, so as they're driving along, someone up on a bridge, all dressed in black on a motorbike, you probably know who it is based on the last movie. Starts shooting at them, and they're like, oh shit. They stop under the bridge. Everyone but Ethan and Lane get out. Oh, actually, before they get out, Walker's like, hi, I'm Walker. And Benji just goes, was the little car your idea? No one will say who they are to him. He's just like trying to introduce himself. And they're like, fuck you, dude, you big idiot. So anyway, they jump out of the car and Ethan just takes off. And I fucking love this car chase scene so much. Like this tiny little green BMW zooming around, being chased by, as it turns out, it's Ilsa on a motorbike. Just the stunts, like the main stunt that he does is he is driving down a little lane and there's some steps, and so he does the handbrake, spins around backwards and flies backwards down the stairs, and then just lands and keeps driving. And even like professional stunt drivers would struggle to do that, because you have to change gears mid-air and do all these things. And I tell you what, I want to be a stunt car driver so bad just to do that once, I swear to god.
This whole chase scene, my notes, I just wrote
It's
the whole time I was like gripping
so
my chest.
So well done. Like they're zooming down a street and then Ilsa sees a way to cut them off and zooms off and like manages to cut them. And like as she's zooming through past all these columns, all the air's going past her. It's just really well done. And also this scene didn't have any music because whenever there's a motorbike chase, motorbikes sound awful. Like you have to have music over them because it just doesn't sound nice. But cars actually have a sound good when they're doing stunts. So there's no music in this. So it's all just car sounds. And yeah, she cuts them off, confronts them. That's when they realize it's Ilsa and she has a gun pointed at them. And now Ethan's like, split decision, just floors it and hits her as she's trying to shoot them. And
what? The last movie where she makes
stop. I didn't even put that together. It's like revenge.
This time it was like, not this time, babe.
Just boom, go. She's hit. And as they're zooming off, like Ethan's like shaking his head like, damn it, I didn't want to do that. And Solomon Lane's like, that was Ilsa. Very interesting. He's like, shut up. He's like, very nice to see you, Ethan. So Ethan takes Lane to the rendezvous point. Lane is having his big like villain spiel. And like there's a bit where he goes, you should have killed me, Ethan. And Ethan's like, boo, that was my dream. But meanwhile, Luther is...
And he says Fallout here too. Yeah. So I've been paying attention. All of the movies that are named, they actually say the name of the movie in it. And I was like, I wonder if they say Fallout in this one. And they do, because he's like, the blood's on your hands, the Fallout. Yeah. Like,
it's a very good villainous spiel, I reckon. So they're getting the tracker out. There's a big tracker out. Like earlier on when they first get him, they just put something on, a patch on to stop the tracker from being read, but they have to obviously get it out. And you can hear like choppers and stuff getting closer. Luther gets it out and they put it in a drone and Benji just flies a little drone away. So, which is very simple, but very clever. Ethan kind of has like a bit of a moment with Lane because he says this stuff that kind of, I don't know if they're trying to sort of set up that maybe there is a chance that Ethan's going to turn, like, I don't know, his expression in that is kind of like.
They're like you were saying before, they're kind of like Batman and Joker, like they kind of exist together, they could be each other.
Yeah, they are absolutely the Batman and the Joker in their, the way they've set this up. The fact that they've brought him back, like Ethan ends up having a meeting with the White Widow right by the River Seine with the Notre Dame in the background. And like watching that, there was like no one on the footpath. If you've ever been to Paris in the last 15 years, there is not a time of day or night where everything isn't crawling with tourists at all times. That's the only really unrealistic thing I found about this movie is like when he's able to drive anywhere at all, even on a motorbike without much traffic or tourists, I'm like, unrealistic. Like there should be just fucking tourists everywhere.
They must have just spent half of the film's budget on just shutting down streets in Paris. I can't imagine that's a thing.
Well, which I forgot to mention before, doing the Arc de Triomphe thing, they asked and asked and asked if they could get it. And finally they were like, look, on a Sunday morning, we're shutting it down on a Sunday. Before we need it, you can have the 2 hours beforehand. And the first half an hour of that was going to still be dark. So they only had an hour and a half and they had to do that entire thing, setting up for all the stunts and everything in one hour and a half, like, which is wild. Just because they wanted to do Arc de Triomphe because it would look cool, which it did. And like they had to quickly get like 40 cars in and So yeah, like it's the whole thing is just like, imagine being the assistant director, which is the assistant director, I think, or the second AD are the ones who do all that. Like they actually like make sure they can close down streets and all that stuff. Like what a fucking nightmare. I hope they got paid $1 million for that.
We'll cast.
He talks to the White Widow and she talks about, you know, what happened. And he explains, I didn't trust anyone. Your brother's plan stunk. So I did my own thing. And she's like, family, what can you do? And yeah, they have a talk and she says, who was the woman? I think she killed some of my men. We saw her at the party. And she's like, well, if you want your plutonium, I need her too at the rendezvous point in London. And he's like, no worries. I don't care for her at all. Whatever. Then White Widow gives him a big sneaky pash for no reason.
A big
power move, I think, on her part. Which is like, I think you're sexy. Because she makes a joke about how I thought you'd be uglier. So she's just like, I'm going to give him a big smooch now to seal the deal. Just a little cutaway as well. We get to see Ilsa and Ethan meet up. Ethan's leaves the meeting. Ilsa is following him. She like look around the corner and there's the back of Ethan. And anyway, they end up in this...
It's such a spy movie
I think it's the most spy movie thing that they've done in this entire franchise so far. And like he's in this beautiful courtyard, this tree-lined alleyway thing. And they talk and he's like, what are you doing here? And you know, he figures out her job was not to kill Lark. It was actually that she needed Lark to break Lane out because she needs to kill Lane because she's back with the MI6. They wouldn't let her go. Or she, you know, if she tried to escape, she'd just be on the run for the rest of her life. So to prove she's loyal because she spent 2 years being undercover with Lane, she now has to.
Which they sent her.
I know.
Her on.
It's so. Like, why would you want
you
this
feel
job?
So bad.
Who wants this job? Like, it's thankless. You die. You're disavowed. Like, I don't understand. Like, the world can get fucked. It can save itself. It's not worth it.
No wonder they turned
bad. That's what they want. And then they had this horrible rate of everyone turning bad. Like, oh, surprise, who knew?
Like, I'm going to train you to be this absolute weapon, like a full weapon against countries, and then I'm going to do something really shit so you don't like the business that you work for. Like,
it's fucked. They're awful. Every single country, it's all the same. That's why the syndicate started up. It was all the different people from different ones from around the world.
Trying to be union, guys.
Like, we demand not to be disavowed. God damn it. She needs to kill Lane because MI6 do not want all these different government agencies questioning. So he's just been like going from different government to different government being questioned. But because he was former MI6, he's got some really intense secrets. So they're like, we don't want. So it's her job to kill him so that everyone doesn't find out the MI6 secrets, basically. You know, Ethan's like, you should have gotten out. And she's like, you should have come with me. And I got many feels in that. She's like, basically, I have to prove my loyalty. I'll do whatever it takes. Please don't make me go through you. Then it just has another little dream sequence of Julia and Lane for some reason. And they then go to London. And now that we've gone for quite a while, would you be okay if we cut it off here?
Well, good. Okay. I'm so excited. This is so much
I think more. We're only like third of the way through the movie. This might be a three-parter. We'll see. Okay, so we'll cut now. We'll come back next week with the next part, the final, or maybe the second part of three. We'll see. We'll do it as we go along. Britt, can we grab some info where to find you online after this?
I'm on Instagram at Brittamon.
Excellent. And you can find me on Tom Cruise Reviews on Instagram and Tom Cruise Review, no S, on Twitter, or my website, tomcruisereviews.com. In the meantime, please make sure you go watch Fallout so we're not spoiling this movie completely. Yeah, and let me know what you think of Fallout so far. In the meantime, we'll catch you next week.